please back up. Where'd that stop at?
Critical mass.
Critical mass. Well, the critical mass, you couldn't put it in the bomb itself, the critical mass, so that it explode. The critical mass had to be created after it left the airplane. And they even thought about putting it inside of a cannon and stopping one end of the cannon up, putting it loosely in the cannon, and detonate it and push it down to the other end of the cannon and make a critical mass. But they didn't think that that would work. So they worked on the idea of an implosion. That's the opposite to an explosion. That in the bomb, the U-235 would be scattered over a larger area than the critical mass in a ball or in a somewhere, I do not know how, what kind of shape it was in, and you'd have an explosion that would force it all together, and that push it in instead of explosion was pushed it out. And they developed this explosion so that it pushed it into a compact container, compact surface, and so that the critical mass was there. As soon as you arrived at the critical mass, then the whole thing went bang. So the airplane, Enola Gay, was the one that dropped the bomb first. As it went down, the implosion pushed, that gave them enough time for the airplane to escape, to get away, it wouldn't be destroyed by the explosion. And then the implosion pushed the mass together, compacted to the point where they had critical mass. Then the explosion went off and formed a huge mushroom and destroyed the city.
What was the initial thing that caused the detonation?
That was it.
Was it the altitude?
Well, you mean the I do not know whether it's the time or altitude. That was not in my field. It was just set to give the plane, people in the plane, enough time to escape. And I think it was probably time, because it was put down with a parachute.
Set on a detonator. How high was the bomb?
I do not know.
It didn't hit on detonation?
No, it was in the air.
Exploded in the air?
In the air. That's what you call a dirty bomb. In other words, you scatter the radioactive over a wide area. If it's in the ground, that's clean. If the radioactive is trapped inside the ground. And that destroyed that one city. And then they put off one in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, the second one. And then after the second one, Japan they surrendered. Asked for terms of surrender.
I understand that at the first of the war, when America first was involved, they was really behind.
We were way behind. Well, let me go right back to this. When Truman, who was president at the time the bomb was dropped, Roosevelt told him to go ahead and make the bomb, and with the idea that it would be dropped. Well, Truman took over as president after Roosevelt died. He had a meeting with his cabinet to decide should they drop. That was after the bomb was proved successful, Las Vegas, Los Alamos. Should we drop it on the Japanese? And I understood that the majority of his cabinet said it was too terrible a thing to drop on people.
Too cruel.
But he sided. He said, "I'll take it myself. We will drop it." And I think, as I remember back, as I knew later, how the Japanese did the people at Corregidor in the death march in Bataan. I had friends there. A friend of mine, Royce Webb, told about when Corregidor surrendered, the Japanese took it over. Then they made a march through Bataan, capital, the Philippines. Bataan death march. And if somebody got sick and dropped down, they just beat him in the head, kill him with a rifle butt. If somebody tried to help him, they killed both of them. And when you look at and how they bombed Pearl Harbor and how they treated our prisoners, and I cannot understand how people would think that anything was too terrible for the Japanese. That's my opinion. But they said that the theory and the development of the implosion, the key to the bomb, was really more difficult than separating the uranium-235 from 238. Now that was a field I was not connected with. I only got two friends. We talked about it after the war.
So the detonation was the hardest part.
It wasn't the hardest part.
Because the detonation was controlled.
It had to be right. Now this same thing happened in Chernobyl, I understand. That they got too much of radioactive material together, and that went out. In other words, they exceeded the critical mass. Now if you in those creating generating energy, they put in graphite tubes to absorb the neutrons. Then if you take them out, it gets hotter, you put it back in, it stops.
Where did you say the first experimental bomb was
exploded? Los Alamos.
How was it done?
It was done on a tower. I was not there. I just understand from what people said. It was on a tower. And the people were underground behind it when it went off. And no one was notified ahead of time. And they said the baby was, no, I forgot what the code name was, with the telegraph president that it's successful. I think the baby was born successful, something like that. Of course, I was not involved in that. Now, is there any questions you got on that?
That's all on that. Go back to the beginning of the war, when the arming up for the war.
Well, when I was in college, we had practically no air force. We were pushing for the world to disarm, and so we had most of our ships in mothballs. We were not. What we did have, we gave to Russia and England and France. We had only two plants making TNT, Barksdale, Wisconsin, which was connected to the plant I worked at, and Radford, Virginia. I think that was the only two plants they were making when they started the plant in Chattanooga, Tennessee. And about a week before we started the one in Tennessee, the Barksdale, Wisconsin plant blew up.
That's good to know.
Well, we were more careful then. But we had no trouble and no accidents in the startup of our plant. There's four of us in charge of the startup. And we got a recognition as being the safest plant ever started up.
That type of work, you always have to have someone on call 24 hours.
Yep. Now after the plant got started, I was one of the four people on call 24 hours. That was what they call troubleshooting. And I was lucky in that because they even got me a new car so I could get to the plant in a hurry.
And that's when cars was not being made.
The cars were not being made. I got a new 1942 Chevrolet. The cars were not being made. I was very lucky. When I was in college, we had very few airplane pilots, very few planes, and so they trained us, and I volunteered for this work in 1940 to learn to be a pilot. They gave us free pilots training. There's a private pilot and restricted commercial pilot, so we could go to the Air Force. When I graduated before the war, they expected me to join the Air Force. But I did not join the Air Force. I wanted to get into the industry because I figured I'd make more money. The United States, now this is as the people told me, the best plane we had was, they called it the Buffalo, and I don't know what that really means, because it was so slow. And the first pilots who flew those planes and fought the Japanese in the Pacific with their Zeros, they say the Zeros could just fly around and around these old Buffaloes. Now, they claim that the Buffalo had armor around the cockpit. And that's one reason it was so slow, that they had too much weight. The design was, did not realize that if you shot the motor or a wing or a propeller, you were just as dead as if you shot the pilot. So it was really to your advantage to fly faster, to be more maneuverable, than to be just fly along and let people shoot at you. That's one time the United States really worked together. We got all the designs of all the planes. We picked out exactly what we wanted. And the car manufacturers changed their plants over and began making planes. And we worked together. And I don't think that no time since or before, hardly, as the entire country got behind the leaders and developed planes and munition plants like we did. When we first started the TNT plant in Chattanooga, a train stopped twice a day to pick up every pound of TNT that we had to take to the bag to make bombs and shells. We soon cut down the cycle time from an hour and a half to 38 or 40 minutes. They had one more plant that we were supposed to open up. We did not even need to open up. I was really scheduled to start up the TNT plant in Chattanooga, work there 1 year, and then go to the Sunfire Ordnance Works in Kansas. But it was not necessary to ever start the Sunfire Ordnance Works. We made more than they could even use. We stored our excess TNT in igloos on the other side of the hill from the plant. And by the end of the war, we had a big surplus of TNT. The same was true in the other plants for making smokeless powder. And another explosive that came in was RDX. I worked on RDX when I was at the experimental station in Wilmington, Delaware for about 4 or 5 months. Various purification process as among the other explosives I worked on. And this explosive was much sharper than TNT. Dynamite is slower. TNT is sharper and RDX is more sharp than the TNT is. This was made by Eastman Kodak at a plant close to Kingsport, Tennessee. I didn't even know this until after the war when I came this close to Marston, where I live now. They told me they made RDX up at, back close to Kingsport. Another thing, we had to make ships in a hurry. And the women who normally stayed at home and raised kids soon became our workforce. And the women and the old people and the very young turned this country around from a country that just kind of didn't believe in arming it to we were just a manufacturing explosives, bombs, airplanes, tanks, jeeps, and we supplied the world. Of course, we were not damaged like England and France by bombs. See, Hitler couldn't do us any damage here except at the coast towns. naval vessel. We lost a lot of ships going over.
Well, they're submarines.
By their submarines.